Hiya, welcome to episode 2 of Rockin' and Talkin'. I hope that the time between episode 1 and episode 2 has been absolutely fabulous for you. Now, this episode is all about Jess Mayo, an individual who is now a new friend of mine because of this experience. She is in two incredible bands, Ramona Sky and Hot Machine as the drummer, not to mention the social media guru behind Ramona Sky, and a booker for So Far Sounds Melbourne. We had such a great time chatting together, and I really look forward to when I'm back in Melbourne to catch up with her. Are you ready for another entertaining conversation? I thought so. Here we go.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you? Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing pretty good. I had a nice little nap earlier, so I'm like thriving now.
That's so good. I'd love to have a nap. I've been so like nonstop today.
Yeah, what have you been up to?
I've been working. I kind of work two jobs, so I was just sort of balancing it. I work as a social media coordinator for a place called Australian Style Institute. And then I'm also a booker for So Far Sounds. Do you know So Far Sounds?
Yeah, didn't you book the one that was in the backyard that like George did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you there?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was, right. I didn't even realize. Did I meet you that night?
probably like very like quickly.
Yeah, because I met a lot of people that night. I mean, you look very familiar. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Oh my gosh. That's a small world.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Do you have any questions for me before we start?
No, I'm happy to jump into it.
Yay. Okay. And before we do start, I am just going to let you know that there are three different sections of the questions. So it goes through background, what your personal ideation of success is, and also what it's been for you as a musician in Melbourne. Yep. So we'll start off with the background. How would you describe what you do?
Well, I am a drummer and I play. Is this me personally, by the way? Yeah. Okay. Just checking. I wasn't sure if we're talking about like the band or just me. Yeah. Cool. So yeah, I'm a drummer and a songwriter and manager. I kind of wear a lot of hats.
Nice.
And I play drums in two bands that are very active. One is called Ramona Sky. We're an indie rock funk influenced band, I would say. and then I also play drums in an all girl rock and roll band called Hot Machine. And then I also play ukulele in a ukulele trio called Luna the Moon, but that's a very different world because it's more sort of like acoustic covers and so it's kind of a different world than the indie scene.
Yeah. How did you get involved in the two bands that you're in?
So Ramona Sky, which I would say I've always said it's my main project, but I play in Hot Machine just as much. But Ramona Sky, we've been together for 3 years and we started it just before lockdown, COVID lockdown. Actually, during lockdown. And we all met online. So back then I wasn't in any bands. I was taking a break from being in bands. And then being in lockdown, I was really missing it and really bored. And I ended up seeing a post on Facebook in a group called Melbourne Musicians. And they were looking for drummers and guitarists, and that they just wanted to start this band that had a lot of influences that I was really interested in. It was four strangers that commented on that post and then met up online to see if we liked each other. We were able to squeeze one jam session in before we were locked down for good. And just from that jam session, we realized that, we like each other. We work well together. Let's start a band. And, that's kind of how Ramona Sky came about. Whereas Hot Machine, that only started last year and they reached out to me because they were looking for a drummer. They were starting fresh. And I really loved the idea. And so I just kind of, tried out with them and we really gelled. And yeah, that's how that kind of came about.
Oh, that's amazing. And you and Hot Machine has a new song coming out soon?
Yeah, tonight, actually, at midnight. So very exciting.
Yeah. How is it, like, for you, since you do wear so many different hats, like, how do you juggle what you do outside of music, like, within your bands, I mean, but also then being a part of two bands? Or three, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the ukulele trio, we don't do a lot. Like we've played maybe two gigs this year. Whereas, so we just kind of do it when we can. But the other two bands, Ramona and Hot Machine, I'm playing pretty much weekly. it was quite overwhelming at first. In fact, I wasn't going to join Hot Machine when they asked me because I thought there's no way. With work and Ramona and how busy Ramona is, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to fit it in, but I just loved the concept so much. And I was like, I just have to make this work. And I did in the end. I think it helps because one band I do wear a lot of hats in, whereas the other, I kind of just play drums and write my parts. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit easier in that way. So Ramona Sky is the one that I manage, whereas Hot Machine is a little bit easier to manage because, I'm not wearing all of those hats and kind of just more the performer-songwriter role. I think it helps having a really supportive workplace as well. So where I work, Australian Style Institute, they're very supportive of my music career as well. I work 4 days a week instead of full-time, so it helps me just juggle everything that I need to catch up on. So, to answer your question in brief, like, I actually don't know how I do it. I just kind of roll and just hope for the best.
And so far, it seems like you're doing good.
I'm happy. I'm happy and not crying inside. I think that's
good. That's the real thing that actually matters. Like, are you feeling like you're sane? Like, are you good?
And like, to be honest, it's such a typical drummer thing as well. Like, every drummer I know is in at least two bands. Like, I don't really know any drummers that's only in one band because they're just so in demand. So I think we just learn to get used to it.
Like, are there in general? Because I don't know.
Yeah, in general.
Means to be a part of a band, but like, are there not enough drummers?
I think as well, because I'm a female drummer, it's very in demand as well. So like when Hot Machine started, their whole brand was to be an all female band. They were looking for a female drummer who can play well, I guess, and has experience. So I guess honestly, they're a little bit hard to find. I mean, I know of a lot now because I've been in the community, but when I first started out in the scene, there weren't many female drummers at all. But just drummers in general that are really committed and can play well and have experience, they are pretty hard to find compared to guitarists or singers that are trying to land a career in music. So,
I just learned something. Thank you.
No, that's okay. I mean, it's not a fact or anything. It's just something that I've noticed in Melbourne.
Because that's really interesting. Like, because I imagine, obviously, like, to have, like, a full band, you want to have, like, a drummer there. But it just shows me I know nothing about putting together a band. So this is just a little bit more eye-opening for me. So I really appreciate that because I was like,
that's okay. I mean, like, not to, like, press my own buttons or anything, but I don't know. What's the word? But the drummer really is the backbone of a band. It's so important that there is a really strong drummer in every band. And they can be hard to find. So, yeah.
Kudos for being reached out to.
It's nice.
And how long have you been drumming?
I've been playing since I was 10. So I think that's about 17 years now. I'm 26. Yeah, so a very long time now. And cool. I've been involved in bands pretty much the same amount of time too.
Okay. And has it always been drums for you?
Not always. I started with piano when I was 3.
Okay.
And also singing lessons when I was a really young age as well. I think I did singing lessons at 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they didn't last very long because they just weren't for me.
Yeah.
And then picked up the drums and realized that was my instrument. But as I continued playing and learning drums, I started moving back to singing and piano as well and mm-hmm. trying to pick that back up again. And I wouldn't say that I'm a professional at either or highly skilled at them like I am with drums, but it's definitely another like melodic outlet that I have that I'm able to use when I'm songwriting or I've picked up that interest again with other instruments.
Amazing.
But yeah, and then ukulele is probably like the second instrument that I know really well.
Nice. Wow, so you're a bit of a multi-instrumentalist in a way.
Yeah, in a way. I guess just drums is a main focus.
Yeah. Amazing. And one of the other questions I have, this is all like based off of like how you perceive yourself as a musician. Would you consider yourself full-time or part-time musician?
That's an interesting question. Because I guess full-time would mean that I'm not working anywhere else and just focusing on music. So technically I'm part-time, but it feels full-time because after work every single night I am doing something with music, whether that's rehearsing or playing a gig, because I rehearse at least twice a week with my 2 bands. And then there's times where I have 2 or 3 gigs a week as well on top of that. So it's a really interesting question, I think. Like technically part-time, but it feels like full-time.
Like for the main job that you do outside of music, is that something that you're doing as a way to like invest in your bands monetarily?
Kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know this might be going a bit off topic, but I studied fashion design when I came out of high school. So I did a bachelor degree in that. So the goal was always to work in fashion. And I'm still very interested in it and but really struggled to find a job in design during COVID because I graduated into COVID, which was such a shame. You did as well, yeah. Oh, the struggle. So I was trying to find anything in work when I could get out of lockdown. And I was able to find social media in a fashion job, which I do really enjoy, but I guess it's not what I initially studied for or anything. And then music was always just like the hobby on the side. Like I've always done music on the side, thinking that I'm going to work in fashion. So right now, it's almost like music is taking up a lot more of my life. And I'd say my job is kind of supporting that, like you said. Not that like, I do really enjoy it, but it just seems to be, I seem to be more invested in music.
That's really cool and good for you for finding something that still puts you in a place where like, you know, fashion is still kind of there. And because I know like because for me at least like the way I entered into like the music space because I took a break from music like my original plan was to be a producer that did not work out not my skill set but when recently within the past year when I was like getting back into music like getting this master's degree that I'm doing now my like entryway was definitely being a social media manager at a recording.
Oh, there you go.
And it's just like, I feel like it's, I don't want to say like it's one of the easier ways to kind of put yourself in like the space you want to be, but it's a good entry point for sure.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it all kind of ties in as well. Like having social media skills really helps with the band stuff as well.
Oh, yeah.
So, and vice versa. I mean, I got this job not just from studying fashion, but from doing all the social media stuff for my bands and showing that. Yes. And yeah, so it all kind of goes hand in hand in the end.
Yeah, and because you are the only one that I've been able to talk to that has, like, a bit more of that, like, social media, like, background. How does that, like, how has that helped with the bands, both in your bands, like, exposure?
Unfortunately, I think it's the most important way to promote your band these days. So we can't just rely on the music anymore, as much as that's what I would prefer. Now it's just all about, like getting attention on TikTok and Instagram and everyone has short attention spans as well. So trying to figure that out and only playing a very short snippet of your song to make sure that people are grasping it. So it's helped. I mean, we're still, with both of my bands, we don't touch a lot on TikTok. We try it. We have definitely tried to, and we will continue to try to. But it's just so, like they all say, like, we're musicians, we're not content creators. But we have to learn to be, I think, in this day and age. So we focus a lot on Instagram, and I'll speak more about Ramona Sky in this sense, because my, a lot of the socials for Ramona more than Hot Machine. I think the main thing that's helped us is our aesthetic online. So we're kind of a very image driven band. You know, we're all about the music, but in the same way, like, we're all about fashion and style, and also, having a certain look and aesthetic that can connect with others and creating that brand. That's actually the same with Hot Machine. They both have very strong brands. But the number one feedback that we've gotten with Ramona Sky is, I looked at your Instagram and immediately loved it and followed it because it looks amazing. Like, who runs your Instagram? Like, it just looks so good. Like, I want to keep scrolling. Like, how do you tie everything together so well? Like, we get that compliment a lot. And I think that's really important, building a brand and just from first glance, that, you know, a consumer sees your social profile on first glance and thinks, this looks cool. I'm sure they sound cool as well. Like, they know what they're doing. They're really put together. So yeah, but, we definitely need to work on trying to create some viral moments on TikTok because our friends have, like, our, it's some bands that we're friends with have gone viral on TikTok, and now they're touring and they've been picked up all just from going viral. And, do you know Woolley Bank Grove? You heard of them? They're amazing. Definitely check them out. And we've been friends with them from the start, like since we started, and their music has always been incredible, but has been underappreciated. So they ever been picked up, and every time we always thought, like, how is this song not big, because it's so good. And then they ended up making a video of just like it was pretty well produced video of them miming their song, like just pretending to play in the video, but using a really catchy part of the song, and it took off and it went viral, and now they're really popular in America. More than here. Just from that one video, like, taking off, and we saw it and we're like, oh my gosh, we have to do this, but we can't be bothered.
Wow. And that's the thing, like, with, you know, socials, especially TikTok, like, it's always so unpredictable of like how it's going to even, like, take off, like, if you're not always on every single day and have, like, the same thing, where it's like, I'm watching one of my friends right now, they just released a single, and I've, like, because I follow them on TikTok and on my feed, I've seen, like, the same clip over and over again, but with different words on the video, and I'm like, I know what you're doing, I'm like, this is great, and I'm, like, reposting it, and I'm like, maybe this will help me. Because I know, because, like, it can be tough, but also it's the whole thing of, like, not trying to like overwhelm yourself either with like trying to do all of that.
Yeah. I mean, like personally, we need to write music. Like that's what we're lacking at the moment, new music. Yeah. And that's what we're finding the most important. We don't really have time to be creating content as well and putting on shows. And yeah, it's a big struggle, I think. Especially if you don't have a team to do it for you.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Like kudos to you for like doing it for the band and being a drummer and doing all the things that you do. Oh,
thank you. You're welcome. Thank you. But I guess it's all part of it now.
Yeah. You're very much so doing the DIY.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So now I want to move into like the next section of questions, which is all about like what you think of success. So the first question is, are you living on or off of music? So thinking like income.
Yeah, I am not living on music at all. Neither are any of my band members in any band. So we are all doing the music for fun. But in saying that, we are all about being paid properly, and we won't do anything for exposure anymore. In fact, I don't think we ever did in the first place. So we definitely know our value, but we're not living off of it at all. We definitely don't make enough money to do that. So we've all got several jobs actually to keep the band thing afloat. And also we don't really, and like, I'm sure they won't mind me saying this, but with both bands, we don't keep any of the money we make either. We invest it all back into the bands too.
Okay. And do you have like a baseline rate that like if you are playing a show, like is there like an expectation or like an agreement that you've made with the venue about how much you would like to get paid?
Kind of. We don't have a set rate. We do like to go by the absolute minimum $250 per person for shows, but we don't usually get that. So that's why I'm saying we don't really have a proper agreement or anything. But if we are asked for a quote, that's what we would go by, like at minimum. But yeah, there's a lot of gigs where we would just get offered like $150 for the whole band, and we're just kind of like, like we're starting to sort of think about what we're taking now, and it's got to be worth our time, because I mean, like, especially for people like me that's in several bands, I'm saving a whole date to play a show. And if I'm taking a date where we're earning like $150 for the whole band, whereas like I get a gig with the other band that's like $1,000 for the whole band, and yeah, we've just got to really pick things and be smart about what we're choosing to play. Yeah, it depends. Like if it's like a charity show, then we're like, whatever, who cares, because it's for charity. But yeah, it just really depends on the show.
So having a lot more intentionality behind like which shows you're beginning to play.
Yeah, we're very intentional. Yeah,
as you should be. I am a big believer that like anytime someone plays, they should get paid and get paid properly, because you are working. You're not, I mean, play music and have fun, and people get to have fun experiencing it, but also it's a job.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And we're putting a lot of time and effort into it as well. Yeah.
But good for you for advocating for the $250, because I know that's like a new standard that's trying to be like upheld now.
Yeah, and I don't even think it's official or anything. No, it's not. But I'm hoping they do make it official soon, because it seems fair. Yeah. Yeah.
And then this next question that I have, it'll be interesting because you could answer this from the viewpoint as a musician, but also as like the booker side of things. So I think it'll be really interesting. So what are three things that you consider makes like a musician successful?
Okay. So I think from like an outside point of view, Okay, actually, you know what? From the booking point of view,
yeah.
I think the number one thing that we look for is, can they sell tickets? Mm-hmm. And so if a band has posted on socials that they've sold out a certain venue, or they've sold out a tour, or they're filling rooms, that is a massive indicator of of success. I don't think that means that they're the best band in the world or they're the most talented or anything, but definitely successful. I think the second indicator would, I would say streams, like amount of streams that they have and listeners, but it's hard to tell a lot of the time with streams, because like you could be not very active and still have a high number of streams from someone listening in Brazil or wherever, but like they might not actually come to your show. So it's because they're overseas or something. I don't know. I find that one a really interesting one. So I think like, the number one most important is can they sell out shows or fill rooms? And streams is an iffy one. I think another one, even if they're, and I would take this from being a band member because the outside world wouldn't know, but how many gigs you're being asked to play. So like, for example, both of my bands don't always accept every gig, like I said before. So not everyone would know how many gigs we're being asked, but we do get a nice feeling when we're constantly being asked to play all types of different shows. I think that's a really good measure of success because they obviously a lot of different people see potential in you and really love your music and look at you as a successful band, even if you're not selling out rooms. If we're getting asked, it's like, cool. Obviously we're seen as successful, which is nice. So I'd say that's probably number two. And number three, and this is like number one in my eyes, but not in like an industry perspective, would be when somebody comes up to us in person and says just how much they have really enjoyed our set, or just like how they had the best night ever. Like, to me, like, I feel like a successful person when there's several people coming up to me after I perform saying just how much of an incredible time they had during our set. Like, I was like, yeah, I've accomplished something. Like, this is what I came here to do. Yeah. Like, so people have fun because like that just makes me want to play even more, like, because I make other people happy. So I think that's the greatest measure of success.
Oh, I love all of that. Oh, that's so much to work with. Oh, that's so good. Like, because I think it's like, I love both of the perspectives, like, especially the thing with you said, like, you know, can someone sell out shows? But also, like, the thing with streaming is not like streaming can help a bit with getting an idea, like, do people actually listen? But I think it also depends on what scene the person is involved in, because I know that maybe, like, I know some scenes don't get a lot of streams, but people will show up to shows. So it's kind of like, how good of an indicator can that really be?
Yeah.
The real magical thing that you said was the connection bit at the end with, like, you played a really good show and then somebody or, like anybody in the audience can validate that, or even just, like, if you felt like maybe it wasn't that good, or maybe you had like a moment where you're just like, because I know it happens from time to time, but if somebody can validate, like, yo, no, I loved all of that. Like,
yeah,
I'm sure that's super validating that, like, oh, like this thing that I'm doing at times, even though it's challenging, has its actual extrinsic like reward.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, we're not just doing this for ourselves now, it's like we're doing it for other people too, which is cool.
Yeah. Oh, that's so nice. Oh, amazing. And then my next question is, what is happening in your music career at the moment, and do you have any like short-term or long-term goal that you're working on?
I'm just gonna keep referring to both bands. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Absolutely.
That's because they're both so active and it just makes sense that way. All right. So we'll start with Hot Machine because there's a lot happening there. Yeah. So like we said before, we're releasing a single tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're actually releasing an EP in September.
Exciting.
Yeah, so we've got new music to come out really soon, but more excitingly, we're actually touring Japan in October.
Oh, so, cool.
And that's personally my first ever international tour. So so that's really awesome. Lots and lots happening there with Hot Machine. Some cool shows coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Ramona Sky, we are currently writing and working on a brand new EP to come out, who knows when, but yeah, we're in that writing stage at the moment. So it's been really good getting creative because the entire year we've just been playing shows like almost every week and haven't had time to actually sit down and be creative.
Mm.
So we're doing that at the moment and taking things slow. So kind of the opposite to Hot Machine right now. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. At least like you have like that good balance of like one thing is picking up and the other one you can at least like have that necessary breathing room to be creative to make the new things that you want to make.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or else we can't keep moving forward, really.
Because if you don't have the downtime to actually allow yourself to brainstorm that stuff, it's not going to come up.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
Ooh, and also congrats with the new song coming out and then the upcoming EP and tour. How did Japan get worked out?
We actually supported Mac Pelican. Do you know them?
Mm-mm.
They're a band from the 90s that are from Japan.
Oh, cool.
And they toured Australia earlier this year. I think it was March or February or something like that. And they asked us to support them at the Tote. And yeah, so we met them before that, but we played that show and they really loved us and they went back to Japan and recommended us to their promoters who also looked after a couple of other tours happening. So, so they recommended us to Guitar Wolf, who is a big Japanese band as well. And they're hosting a festival called Shimani Jet Fest in Shimani, Japan, asked us to play that. And then we're jumping on tour with D4 from New Zealand, who's doing their Japan tour. So it's like, so we're supporting D4, so it's not our tour.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Whoa, that's still amazing though.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable for a band that started a year ago. It's been a year. So crazy.
What do you think has happened to allow that to even like to get that opportunity?
I think like we've been moving very, very quickly from the start. Mm-hmm. And I think there's two reasons that we've been skyrocketing so quickly. One is probably the image and concept of the band. I mean, we're an all-girl rock and roll band.
Yeah.
There aren't many girl bands that play our genre. So we're, you know, there's a lot of like all-girl punk bands and indie bands, but to play sort of AC/DC rock and roll, there aren't many. Well, actually, I don't really know of any in Melbourne. If you do, like, let me know, that'd be great. But all-girl bands that kind of mimic the sound of AC/DC and the Runaways and things like that, there aren't many around. So as soon as we kind of stepped on the scene, we got picked up very, very quickly because it was something different and exciting. But the other reason I think we kicked off so quickly is because our very first show was supporting Kingswood, which is a really big band. And we got that through connections. Like, cause any brand new band, it would be so hard to get a gig like that for your first show. Yeah. So, you know, in all transparency, well, because of connections. But having that show as our first one really kicked us off because there was a large audience there who saw us straight off the bat. Other big bands noticed that we were on Kingswood's Kingswood's bill and asked us to play their shows, and it just kept growing from there. So it was just all very lucky.
Yeah.
Very lucky, and we worked very hard from the start as well to make sure it all sounded good and we had a proper image and everything. There was a lot of work that was put into it as well.
Oh, wow. That's quite incredible, because I know that, like, when you hear about people who have the opportunity to tour outside of Australia, it's always this really, it is a big deal. It's a huge deal. So I'm always so curious, like, when people get the opportunity to do so, I'm like, what? Like, how did that happen? Because that's kind of like the mystery is, like, how do people get out of the country?
Yeah. I would say, like, for that specific opportunity, it was just, we were that we supported an international band, so in Melbourne, and then they recommended us. So I think, like, if you can somehow see if you can jump on international acts when they come to Melbourne, like, look up their booking agents and see who they are, like, you know, if any band from overseas is touring and they don't have supports yet, like, jump on it straight away. I think that's how you just got to start connecting with the international bands.
Good advice. And now, talking about, you know, being a musician in Melbourne, what are three challenges that you've experienced with being a musician here?
So many. Well, even this is very specific to me, but to, like, to jump off of what I just said. One challenge with, like, Ramona Sky is we've been together for 3 years and we're still trying to get certain opportunities, ones that, like, Hot Machine do have. And got so quickly. So it's just such, and, like, there's reasons why Hot Machine has gotten certain things and Ramona Sky hasn't and all of that stuff, because they're completely different bands and different scenes. But in, like, I'll talk Ramona Sky now, in, like, the indie rock scene, it's so, oh gosh, I'm blanking the word. I use it all the time. Overcrowded.
Oversaturated?
Oversaturated. Thank you. Yeah. It is such an oversaturated industry. There's so many bands that are trying to get to the same places and, yeah, like separate, like, we have different goals to, like, Hot Machine, and like, Japan isn't even on our radar, but, like, you know, like, we have goals, like, we want to play festivals, and I'm like, I'm not even talking, like, Splendor in the Grass, I'm talking, like, even smaller festivals, like, you know, like, Port Fairy Folk Fest, and like, just any kind of festival, and it is so hard to get on a festival lineup, and I don't know, like, we just haven't cracked it yet. And also building our team, and this is for both bands, actually, like, trying to attract management or booking agents. Like, booking agents is a big one for us, because we're trying to get those bigger gigs, and you can only really do that with a booking agent. So just trying to attract the right people in the industry has been very difficult, because like, sometimes they'll reply, but they'll be like, we can't take on any more people because there's too many bands. I think it's just so hard to stand out. I think that's been difficult. And I mean, like, we've been lucky too, like, with Ramona, like, we've supported bands like the Terries and Betty Ray's, and Psychedelic Porn Crumpets. Like, we've supported some big bands, but we feel like we're at that stage where we should be doing that a lot more often, and it's so hard to nail that down. It just seems to be, like, every now and then that we get that offer, and it's so exciting, and just pushing forward has been kind of tricky, and I believe it is because of that reason that it's hard to stand out with so many amazing bands around, and professionals and industry professionals just not wanting to give you the time of day. Especially when you're not already big. I remember I went to Big Sound conference. Have you been?
Yeah.
I think I might have spoken to you about this, maybe. I'm not sure. Did you go to Big Sound last year?
No, but I know of it. It's bad timing that, like, when I leave to go back to the U.S. for a bit, it happens where I leave, and I'm like, right.
Yeah, oh, that's okay. It happens every year, so so next time. But I went last year. I went to a couple of the conferences, and I went to this event called Roundtables, where so where like different companies in the music industry would have their own table, and then you would just sit with them and chat to them about and ask them questions about anything. So I made sure to go and sit on Triple J's table because I like Triple J seems to be like they think they're the tastemakers for everyone, but unfortunately, like, they kind of are for the general public. And it's like once you've made it on Triple J, then so many doors open, and like that's why it seems to be such a goal for so many bands to get played on there. And you know, they're the ones that promote Blender in the Grass and Groove in the Moon, the big festivals. So I sat with them. And because we've never had Triple J play, like we've tried so many times, and that's another very big challenge, like having radio play. unless it's community radio stations, big love to them because they really do support. But stations like Triple J and obviously commercial stations, like we don't even try. But yeah.
Hey y'all, I'm going to interrupt this part of the interview to provide context here regarding Triple J and Big Sound to assist Jess in sharing this information to the public. For those of you who may not know this, Big Sound is a music festival and conference that happens annually in September in Brisbane. Triple J was mentioned before in the previous episode with Romany as well. That radio station is one of the largest commercial radio stations in Australia. Even an article published in 2013 that I read and used for my research project mentioned the power and control that Triple J has had during that time, and we see now, still 11 years later, that it still has that power as a gatekeeper. It is not a bad thing, no. But it presents itself as a challenge for musicians, especially indie musicians, on how to get their music played to a larger audience in Australia, moving them beyond their local community, beyond getting played on local community radio stations. As Triple J, depending on what sounds are popular in Oz, or even within the international music market, will end up making them be more picky on what sounds get to play and who they decide gets to be played. Now, this is what Jess shared with me from the chat that she had with Triple J during the roundtable event at the Big Sound conference that she attended. These are the top two things that she shared with me that I want to share with you because I believe it's important for you to know this. One, once you have built your audience, they will consider playing you. And two, they only play an artist, whether that's, you know, a band or solo act, that already has a quote-unquote decent following. And that just creates this whole loop of, oh, if you have an audience, is that a big enough audience for them to play you? But then also you need commercial radio play to help you build a bigger audience to gain more visibility for your music and traction in your career. So it creates this cycle of, am I doing the right thing? And especially since there are no posted parameters that I'm aware of that, you know, I have yet to see that mention how many plays or streams or followers you should have on Spotify, nor any information or, you know, parameters about how many followers you have to have on social media. That leaves us with a curiosity about what are the thresholds that Triple J has regarding sonic development from musicians, how many streams people should have, how many followers people should have. And another thing that's really interesting is that there's no mention about the consideration of how the role of live music experiences indicating a worthy value of having a decent following, as some genres actually don't have a lot of streams or followers on social media, but they have a really good live music turnout. So it all becomes this whole topic that, you know, we're having this now about what actually are the parameters of having
a decent following and building an audience, and that equaling radio play, it just makes things very curious. And that's where commercial radio play on Triple J versus Triple J Unearthed are two different approaches to getting played on radio. For people who don't know this, Unearthed is aimed to help rising emerging indie musicians get played through a discovery platform and provides more support and visibility that way. The whole thing is getting unearthed, like, oh, here's this new musician, check them out. It doesn't always lead to, you know, commercial radio play, but it could. And now this is where we continue the interview with what Jess has to say regarding Triple J Unearthed and way more.
And honestly, Unearthed, like, they do, I've noticed they obviously do give a lot more opportunities to independent bands, but Triple J is where we want to be at.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, and it's so obvious, like what they said is completely true. Like, you know, they only do really clay bands that do have a really growing audience already. And it's hard for those who are pretty stuck. It's like, we're trying to grow our audience, but we either need to like get on a really big streaming streaming playlist or get played on Triple J.
And then like, even within that, it's like, it would be nice to know exactly what the parameters are. Like, what does it mean to actually have an audience? Like, does that come down to like how many streams you have? Like, or are you getting on editorial playlist, or are your shows getting sold out? It's like, and it becomes this vague thing. It continues to be this, like almost like a dark art of like, oh, like how do you actually get on commercial radio? But it's like, oh, if they don't make it super transparent, then it's almost this thing that like feels, I'm sure maybe it feels like it's so detached in a way from like what's actually going on. I'm assuming it might feel that way.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like what you said is bang on, I think.
So, yeah. Yes. I've had many a conversation about Triple J and like, not that it's a bad thing, because it does, it's definitely the, tastemaker, but also the gatekeeper of a lot of things. And a lot of the other conversations I've had with some other musos, and also had a conversation with a music producer as well, and they all had very similar things to say, like, if you're not making music that Triple J would like, then you're not going to get played. And so some people were saying they've seen people get stuck in this position where they made music that is just for Triple J, and that becomes their whole identity. And then it's like, oh no, like this isn't the music I actually want to play. But now since I'm playing on commercial radio, then now that's the expectation, is like, I continue with this sound, even if it's not the one that they wanted.
That is so right. And we've literally had those moments where we're like, do we need to start writing like a Triple J song? And then we're like, that is not the reason we're here. Like, we're not trying to, you know, like we want to get picked up for sounding different, you know?
Hopefully one day the Triple J like gate can be like opened a little bit more, because there's like, I know I'm very biased to my friends who are musicians here, but it's like, they're all like, everyone that I know and have discovered has been so good that like, as someone who's not from this country, like coming in and like discovering all these bands, immediately my reaction is like, why aren't some of you bigger?
Yeah.
And I know like partially it's like just how the music industry works, and I know that everybody wants to be super big, but on my end I'm like why? I'm like, you deserve way more attention than what you're getting. And as I'm learning more about how the industry works here, I mean, as a nation, but also figuring out Melbourne as its own little vibey place, I'm like, oh, I'm like, okay, now I'm seeing like there are some barriers, but it's like y'all are trying your best to work around them, get through them.
Yeah like there's still a place for every band, I think, in Melbourne anyway. But it just might not be like the big end goal of not every band is going to make it to Splendor in the Grass, and you know, so but I think there is a place for all of them.
Yeah. And that leads me to the next question. What are three ways that being a musician in Melbourne has actually helped you?
Helped me personally?
Yeah, like in your career.
Do you mean like as a So how has being a musician in Melbourne specifically? Yes. Sorry, yes. I'm just trying to like think of an answer.
No, you're right. You're right.
It's been a big day. I would say like we have a really good sense of community in the music scene in Melbourne. And really early on, we created some good relationships with other bands and musicians. And that really helped us move forward because once we like, as in like when we were starting out, we were able to organize so many gigs and get asked for to play so many gigs right off the bat because we were friends with everyone and we all wanted to play with each other and we lifted each other up. And I think that really, really helped actually building those connections really early on with the scene. And like that isn't just from playing gigs, but actually going to support other people's gigs as well and meeting them there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Melbourne scene does that really, really well. And we've got so many different types of music scenes as well, which is something that I learnt after being in Hot Machine because there was a whole bunch of new bands and people that I had never heard of, which was so strange to me because I was so invested in like the indie world where Ramona Skye comes from. And I thought, how do I not know that these bands exist and these people exist? Because like, there's so many different scenes that we have. And like, that's what I mean by like every band kind of has a place in Melbourne, I think.
Yeah.
So did that answer the question?
Yeah, it did. Like the community bit, the opportunities that come through meeting new people and then
the
ability to like allow yourself to move between different scenes and actually see what's there. And I think that's a really cool thing too. Like I didn't realize like how, I mean, I knew there were a lot of scenes here, but as I've begun to go out to like random gigs, just because I'm like, I want to discover something, the more I've like realized it, I'm like, oh, it's actually nice being able to get to listen to music that's kind of out of my typical like listening scenes. And then, you know, like it's really nice. And I'm sure like as a musician, like it does that help with writing music as well?
As in meeting people?
Or even just like going, because you have like one scene and going into like another.
In a way, I mean, because like with my two bands, I kind of have to stay in their lane. So like, with Hot Machine, I don't actually write as much in Hot Machine. I just kind of write the drum parts and I contribute to each song. Whereas Ramona Skye, I've written full songs. So with Hot Machine, it's like we know that we have to, stay in our lane and like write just rock and roll music that's going to fit in with that Melbourne scene, like with that rock underground Melbourne scene. Whereas like Ramona, it's an interesting one because whenever we write a song, it's like, cool, this would fit in with the indie scene, but it would also fit in with the Melbourne psychedelic scene. And it would also fit in with the Melbourne funk and soul scene. So we definitely do keep that in mind where it's like, when we write music, it's going to fit in a certain area of music, I think. Yeah.
That's fun. And then who do you typically, like, what are the audiences like at the shows for either band?
This is another interesting one. Ramona Skye, we have really young people. So like 18, 19. And it always shocks us and we're like, wow, okay, like we're obviously cool and hip. I think that's kind of like the audience that we're trying to get into as well, because they're really passionate, like a really passionate age range, and they want to discover new bands and show off their new bands and stuff that they discover. So it's a cool age range to attract, I think. But in saying that, we do get a lot of like a broad age range. I'm a lot older than the other members of Ramona Sky as well. So they're like 22, 23.
Okay.
And I'm 26. Mm. It's like a weird mix between like their age range and then like mine that are more close to 30. Whereas Hot Machine, we get a lot of old dogs. So like we get, we get the young people that are our age that have come to support us, but mainly like people in their 40s and 50s, because like we're playing music that they used to listen to back in the 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
And they're feeling nostalgic, so they come and see us. So yeah, but for both bands, very rowdy, and very, they both love to have a lot of fun and shout. And like Ramona's guy, Chelsea likes to, our singer, she likes to stage dive every now and then. So it's been a while since she's done that, but now just love it. Yeah.
Wow. Personality, vibes.
All about the vibes. We also did this thing in Ramona, our guitarist Nick, we played The Chain as our cover. By Fleetwood Mac, and it's just kind of become this thing. Like we've played it every single gig since we started. And Nick, our guitarist, always gets an audience member to help him play the solo in the song. So they'd put their finger on the fretboard and Nick would like play along with it. And it's just become a thing now. And like, I think audiences know that it's coming up as well because they see it in our videos and they'll come up and be involved. Yeah, we like to be very interactive with our audience.
I love that so much. Like,
yeah.
Oh, like I can imagine, like, especially as like, if I was younger going in and being like, oh, this is a cool opportunity to really like get engaged with this in a whole other way. Fun.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. It's your thing.
Yeah,
yeah. That's it. Yeah, and then I just have one more question for you. Does living in Melbourne give you a sustainable path for your music career? Why or why not?
Definitely. I would say that, and like maybe I'm being super biased here, but I would say that Melbourne is the best place to be in Australia if you want to pursue music. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because we have such a large scene here. Like I said, we have so many different scenes that you can find anywhere. And I say that because I've been to other cities and states, like, and I've spoken to quite a few people from Tasmania, for example. I know Tassie is really small and it's hard to compare, but they always complain because there's never any gigs on. And we travel to Melbourne to go and see live music, and like, it sucks. Like, I can't even imagine that, you know. And, like, I've heard people, like, other musicians from Sydney always complaining, being like, yeah, our scene sucks over here. I can't explain why, but this is just what people have told me. But Melbourne, yeah, it helps so much. And so many people have moved to Melbourne to pursue music. For example, the guitarist from Hot Machine, who started Hot Machine, she moved from Queensland to Melbourne so she could pursue music. And she met all of us in Melbourne to start the band.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's just a very strong music scene here. A lot of great culture.
Yeah. I was saying this earlier today to someone of, like, how, like, I, like, my original, like, where I'm originally from, like, in the U.S., Well, you don't want to live there for music. We got nothing going on.
where from the US are you from?
Indiana.
Cool. Yep.
Yeah, good old Midwest.
And is there's not much of a music scene there? Or?
It's super, super small. Like if you I'm sure like there are some small gigs going on, but not to like the scale of what it's like here. Like if you properly want to go see a show, whether it's a small gig or like a full on like concert, like headlining concert. You probably have to, like, at least for my hometown, you have to probably go up like a nice 4-hour drive up to Chicago or a 6-hour drive down to Nashville. So like, or if you want to, or Ohio, which is 2 hours, but it depends on how adventurous you're feeling.
Whereas like here, yeah, there's always something on, like I'd say every night there is something somewhere.
Going from that place to like my master's degree is based in London, and like getting to kind of see how London scene is and trying to figure out, like, how do I fit in that as someone who's working within the music industry, but then coming here, it's a completely different, like, experience for me, where I'm like, ooh, I feel more creative. And I'm like, I don't know if it's because all my friends are musicians, where I'm like, I feel creative because they're just emitting this energy that's just vibrating with creativity. Yeah. And I'm like, ooh, I feel the need to do something. But also just being here. And I think, like, kind of going back to that, like, you go to gigs and you meet people and you build these communities and these connections, where it's like, I'm very fortunate that the people that I have been able to meet have allowed me to meet so many other people. So it's like, oh, I do have a community here. I do feel like I know a lot more about music, and I can apply the knowledge I've learned in my music business degree into like basis. Now I'm like, oh, I'm keeping up with conversations. I'm like, I know what's going on. I'm like, oh, I'm like, this is a good place to be. And I feel, I know, in comparison to London, this is just my opinion. I have felt so much better with navigating my career here. And I've only been here on a visitor visa for about 2.5 months.
Right. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you've had a good experience here. Yeah. And can I ask you as well, that SoFar show that you came to in the backyard, did you discover that through SoFar, or did you know the host, or
it was because George shared that he was doing it, and I'm like,
you knew George?
Yeah. George and his brother Finn were the first people from Melbourne that I ever met. Like, literally the, like, 4 days after I flew into the UK, I started my job at the recording studio I was at, and they were like, yeah, there's these two Aussie brothers in the studio right now. They seem relatively chill, so like your first day, like, taking photos and videos will be of them. And I was like, okay. So I walked in there. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I've never done this before. So I'm all like really timid. And George is just sitting there like playing the bass. And I was like, I don't know these people. I was like, I don't know what's going on. But I ended up having a really good chat with them, like, in the break, and just kept up with them. And yeah, and they ended up really, like, talking to them was the first time I ever talked to musicians. And then that opened up a whole other, like viewpoint on things, and made me realize that, like, even for me, like, when I thought of the Australian music industry, immediately Sydney comes up. And that's because, like, the corporates are there. So, like, immediately that's the thing. It's like corporation vibe versus the whole other way of, like, music culture, and the way that that thrives here is a lot different than Sydney.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I've never thought of Melbourne. And I'm like, now I met these people. Okay, like, what does this actually mean for me? And I came here for the first time mid-December of last year for about a month, and then I got to meet more of their friends, and then hearing about just like everyone else's journeys in music, that made me realize that there's something that's going on here. And I was like, I'm really interested in, like, what's happening in Australia. And I was like, I know no one's talking about it back in the UK. And I'm like, I know, because, like, Australia is so remote, so sometimes when we have talks about music business, it doesn't get looped in. But I'm like, this is interesting, because I'm like, the conversations are all about, we need to find new musicians, we need to look for, like, these new talents. And I was like, oh, I'm like, have y'all thought about Australia? And they're like, oh, what? And I'm like, y'all, I was like, what is happening? So all in all, I just got really curious and inspired by a few of my friends, and now I'm here doing this final project, which is been super eye-opening and just shows a lot about what's going on in Melbourne post-COVID, at least just from a snippet from some people. Like, it's some really good information.
Oh, good. Yeah. And it's such an interesting topic as well, because the scene was very different before COVID. Extremely different. And maybe it's just where I was, but yeah, it's such an interesting topic to explore, I think. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, because like I think, in my opinion, a big part of the reason why I feel like some people are feeling overwhelmed, or there's just all these different things that are happening about like, why is this working for one musician versus not, you know, like the whole thing. I think a lot of it's because there's this push to go back to how things were prior to COVID, but there's not a lot of like on the ground conversations with emerging musicians directly to figure out like, how are you actually navigating this stuff? Like, what does it actually mean? And all of the like academic things that I've read and all these like recent reports have been like, we don't know what's going on post COVID. So it's, I'm like, but you're making all these changes, but you haven't talked to anybody. And I was like, okay, it's like, I'm going to be a game changer. I'm going to help make sense of what's going on just from talking to people who are currently trying to get through it. And maybe it can make some type of change of like, how do we actually need to look at musicians? How do we actually need to support them and things like that? So that's where I'm at with it. And I'm just taking it all in and hoping for the best and actually having a lot of fun talking
every day.
This is so cool.
I'm excited for you. Like, to I hope it ends up being a really, really cool result. And very, very pleased to be part of it. So thank you for asking me.
Yeah, of course. Like, how you were talking about TikTok earlier, like that's actually how I found out about Ramona Sky. Was like, I was just looking through, like, I went through the TikTok search and I was like, bands in Melbourne, because I was like, I know I was going back, and I was like, I'm gonna find new people, and a TikTok came up and I was like, ooh, I was like, I jive with this. And
right now that you've told me that, we are going to continue with TikTok, because obviously we're reaching people.
Like, it was a good tool, because like, it's so much harder, like the search bar on TikTok works so much better. It's kind of like a Google type thing versus Instagram. So like, if I'm like, one of the things I'm interested in is like A&R and like artist development. So I'm like, if I wanted to find new bands or bands or solo acts, it's so much harder to find that on Instagram, because if I typed in like bands in Melbourne, I'm not going to get the same type of results as I'm going to get like on TikTok, where I can see videos like quickly and actually get an idea of what's going on. So TikTok's been really helpful with that, and so I came across you all, and then it was so interesting. Like, I've been on Instagram and I followed, and I was like, people I know follow this band, and I was like, cool. Then I'm like, this band has to be good, then my friends are following them too. So this is great.
That's so cool. Oh, well, thank you. I know, I remember when you did follow and you were very supportive, and it got me very excited. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. This has been so fun. I've enjoyed our conversation so much.
Me too. And you're such a cool person as well. Like, it's been great getting to know you.
Do you have any questions for me before I let you go?
No, so when do you finish everything?
Oh yeah, good question. The 5th of August.
Oh, okay, very soon. All right, well, good luck with it, and I hope it goes really well, and I hope this was valuable as well.
It was, like, I think that's been one of my favorite things, is like, because I actually interviewed George for this as well, and I was like, I was telling him after this, it's been really interesting to kind of, people are saying things that fill in the gaps of what somebody else hasn't said, and I'm like, okay, then I'm like lining these things up, and I'm like, oh, these people should be like connected, or I'm like, oh, this is so good. Yeah, no, this has been so good for my little brain. Like, I love talking to people. I love analyzing things, and I'm like, oh, this is so fab. Yeah, so no, it's been good. Awesome. My next thing is just to take it all and analyze it, and it'll be done, and I'll feel so proud.
Yeah, as you should be. So
thank you.
Yeah, well, good luck. And yeah, if you're not doing anything this weekend, we've got some gigs. If you want to come along.
I definitely need to get out, because last weekend I didn't do anything. It was my chill weekend. And I'm like, I've worked hard. I'm like, I deserve some fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, you're going back to the US and you're staying there, or are you coming back at all?
I'm going to be there for a bit, because before I came here, I did apply for the working holiday visa, but I did not get that in time. So I just arrived on the visitor visa. So technically, that application is just sitting there, hasn't been processed, because it can't be processed. It can't be given when you're in Australia. So once I leave, it'll be going back to getting reviewed and processed. So the goal is hopefully I'll be back by the end of the year, if not, probably be like January of next year, just depending on how long it takes for that to get processed. But also, okay, I am applying for a PhD program at RMIT, because I really like what I'm looking at now, and I want to continue this research. So it really depends. I'm assuming around November, I'll know about either outcome. So I'll be back. It's just, I don't know what path I'll be back on.
But I'll be back. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Well, yeah, whenever you get back, you should let us know. And we can catch up. Yeah. All right. Well, awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Well, you enjoy the rest of your night. And I'll let you know when this is done. So if you want to take a look at it, you definitely can.
Yeah, that'll be cool. All right. Awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tyra.
You're welcome.
Bye. Have a great night. See you later.
You too. I'm sure you can see why Jess and I had such a fun time talking with each other. I highly encourage you to check out both of her bands by visiting the links in the description to rock out to both of the bands and experience their different vibes. You'll get your indie rock fix by listening to Ramona Sky, and a nice combination of classic rock meets punk by rocking out to Hot Machine. Don't forget to follow them both on Instagram too for additional updates and to stay in the loop. And since we're all mates here, let me know your thoughts and questions about this episode by heading over to the pod's Instagram page at Rockin' and Talkin' Pod and leaving a comment under the post that goes with this episode. Thank you so very much for listening, and we'll be back for more Rockin' and Talkin' in 2 weeks with our next guest. Cheers!